Now on The Pulse, useful and healthy information for you and your family. It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio and the Northeast Delta Dental Team.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's already January 10th and 11th, depending on when you're listening to this show. If you're listening it to on Saturday, January 10th, we're all hoping for a great football game. The Patriots, sometime after 4 p.m. today, January 10th, will be playing the Baltimore Ravens at Foxborough. And after I watch maybe the first half of that game, then it's the inaugural ball, Governor Hassan's ball, that will be at the center of New Hampshire in Radisson. So I'm hoping that we're going to the ball with a good mood, that the Patriots have a nice halftime lead. But who knows? I think the Baltimore Ravens are a tough team. We're already starting the road racing scene for 2015. We have a couple of races coming up, the Hot Chocolate race in Henniker in January, and then there's a Snowflake race in February that John Mortimer puts on. So the road racing never ends, and I think that's one thing that I think has evolved. It used to be road racing was pretty much end of March to about Thanksgiving, but now it seems to be like most sports year long. And it is also a new year, so that brings with it new life for the Affordable Care Act and the public exchanges, which I know that there have been some issues with people in terms of re-enrolling. When you go on healthcare.gov, just make sure that you are set for 2015 if you did purchase your insurance through the exchange in 2014. Particularly if you bought a standalone dental program, make sure that you've re-upped for 2015. And then if you have any problems with healthcare.gov, our private exchange, DeltaDentalCoversMe.com, is a private exchange, which basically gives you the same type of product, you know, maybe even better, you know, to some extent. So if you want to know the strategies behind Northeast Delta Dental and what we've done to participate in both the public and create our private exchange, you can read about it in the book called There Are No Do-Overs. You can get that on Amazon.com. And there were, for a while, there was a holiday. You can get it, the electronic version, for free. The co-author is Dave Cowan, so it's not your typical boring business book. I think you'll enjoy some of the sports anecdotes and the relationships between a successful sports franchise and a successful business. Now, the great thing about this radio program, it allows us to focus on community partners, but also sometimes closer to home. Obviously, Northeast Delta Dental is a dental insurance company, and our oral health mission is really to make oral health the top of everybody's mind and to spread affordable dental coverage. We have recontracted our premier network in 2014, so our prices will be even more affordable in 2015. And of course, the delivery of dental insurance or the oral health product is actually done by the dentist. We are basically the facilitator of the process between the employer or the individual citizen and the dentist. So today's topic is women in dentistry. And with me is not a woman, but actually Dr. Bob Urban. Bob is a longtime dental consultant here for us at Northeast Delta Dental, as well as a teacher at Tufts. So, Bob, thank you for joining me on January 10th and 11th. And I know you're a little nervous about the Patriots game, but I assume you can focus this morning on our radio show.
I'll give it a shot. Thanks for having me, Tom.
Excellent, excellent. So before we get into women in dentistry, so the listening audience can get their hands around your credentials. Tell us about your career in dentistry, and then how you're now teaching at Tufts as well as working at Northeast Delta Dental. Then we'll get into today's topic.
Well, Tom, my background is I graduated from the University of Massachusetts Amherst and then Tufts Dental School. Did a residency program at Philadelphia General Hospital. It's a Penn teaching hospital. started my own practice, and that evolved into a group practice for 25 years until I sold it. In the interim, I was teaching part-time at Tufts Dental School, and I'm now been there for 44 years, and I'm a full professor, clinical professor at Tufts. In the interim, I've also become a Northeast Regional Board of Dental Examiners consultant, and I do exams all over the country during the licensing periods.
And this, just to for the listening audience, this is so after a student graduates from dental school to make sure that they're qualified?
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct.
So you go, how many regions are there in the country?
There's four regions, but Northeast is really a misnomer. They're renaming it. We're now in 44 states. So once you take that exam, you qualify to practice in 44 different states if you apply into those states.
So it's kind of like the National Football League, like the Western Division includes Atlanta or something like that.
It's kind of really strange because the Northeast Regional Board has Hawaii in it.
especially if you look at the globe, I guess. Okay, so when you graduated dental school in 1970?
1970, yep.
So that makes you a youngster. And that really, if you think of it, so that's, 44 years ago, and that's really not that long ago, but I understand from prior conversations that your Tufts class of 1970 had zero women.
That's right. We started with 108 students, and they were all male. I think in the whole school at the time, which is a four-year school, there may have been one or two women. And that has just changed dramatically because this year's first-year class at Tufts now has 53% women. Some of the stats that I had looked up, there's some stats from the University of Missouri. In 1946, there were 99.9% males. In 2005 at the University of Missouri, the male class was 62%. So it's not just at Tufts, it's throughout the country. There's probably about 40% females in the classes now, which actually mirrors more of what's happening in the rest of the world. Most of the world, Eastern Europe, Southeast Asia, dentists were female.
So that had been the situation in Europe. And what do you think precipitated the shift in America? Obviously, I think college in general, forgetting dental school, obviously more college graduates and now women as well. So I think this is obviously an overall trend to that. And what would be some of the other reasons why Tufts basically has gone from 0% women in 1970 in terms of the graduating dental class to 53% in the most recent class?
Well, it's interesting. I looked it up, and some of the ADA statistics, when they delved into this, they noticed that women's liberation being one of the civil rights movement being one of the motivating factors because there was more federal regulation, more federal funding and grants, and women started graduating from college at a greater percentage. And so that just flowed into more people going into the professions. And the second reason was that they quoted was the birth control, the impact of birth control, so that women had more control over their destiny. It's not easy, although I do have some students that are pregnant in dental school. It's tough enough getting through dental school without being pregnant. But some of these kids do it, and it's terrific, but it's hard.
Now, Bob, the one great thing about this radio program, unlike some aspects of my real job as CEO of Delta Dental, it's non-controversial. So we're not necessarily going to talk about birth control and women's liberation. So, but I know what you're saying in terms of obviously it is a great profession for everybody, but you can also, you can to some extent make your hours. I mean, if you want to work 3 days a week and be with, whether you're male or female, and be with the children 2 days a week, you definitely, it's one of the few professions I think that you would have that type of option, because in general, there is some, but there's generally not in emergencies in dentistry. I know there are some, but generally there's not. And you obviously can join a practice where someone's covering the other days. So it seems to me it's like, you know, it's a real ideal, you know, profession.
Yeah, it is. And I actually just recently wrote a paper for the American Association of Dental Consultants that I delivered down in New Mexico and about trends in dentistry. And I addressed the male-female situation, too, which, by the way, I think is great. But one of the realities of the situation is that if you have 100 dental students, and this is not by any stretch of the imagination sexist, and you have 50% females, you're only going to graduate about 75% of full-time dentists because of the birthing issues. It's not endemic to the dental profession. It's just throughout the country, females generally still take care of the children. And I personally know several female dentists who are either out of the workforce or just partially in the workforce. So the demographic of 50% females in a class is ultimately not really all that accurate as far as the impact on the employment situation.
Now, after the commercial break, we'll be talking about some of the most famous women in dentistry, including Kathy O'Loughlin, who is now the Chief Executive Officer of the American Dental Association. And I worked when I was at Delta of Mass. Kathy was a practicing dentist, but also on the board of directors of Delta Dental Plan of Massachusetts. So I know Kathy really well, and I want you to talk about the very first practicing dentist who was female back in 1855. But I remember Professor Chet Douglas from the Harvard Dental School telling me that starting in 2013, more dentists would be retiring from the profession than practicing, and that he mentioned to me you should get... So when your kids get of that age, they should consider dental school. So we'll talk about that macro trend as well when we return from commercial break. Tom Raffio with Dr. Robert Urban will return after commercial break. Please stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Lisa, your Delta Dental Benefits rep. Any questions today?
How long should I brush my teeth for?
2 minutes.
Why should I visit the dentist?
Professional preventative care promotes good oral health.
What's the most popular color of toothbrush?
Blue.
She's good.
As the most experienced dental benefits company, Delta Dental delivers unmatched local service, so enrollees feel taken care of every time.
Visit Northeast Delta Dental at nedelta.com.
Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental. Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio. And with me this weekend, January 10th and 11th of the new year, is Dr. Robert Urban. And Bob is the most impressive dentist, has graduated from Tufts in 1970 and has been teaching at Tufts for many, many years. And also as a part-time dental consultant here at Northeast Delta Dental, he brings a lot of cheer and strategy to the Northeast Delta Dental operation right here in Concord. So we're really blessed that Bob consults for us. So our topic today is women in dentistry, and also if we have time on this segment, we'll kind of talk about some of the macro trends, such as the decoupling of benefits from the employer and the potential lack of busyness in dental offices and what that really means, as well as the fact that you know, the University of New England, for example, opened up its dental school in 2013, and now it has its second class that entered. So, we'll get into that. But since the topic is women in dentistry, Bob, I don't know. Let's start with who was the first practicing dentist in the United States.
Well, it's interesting. When we were getting ready for this radio show, I was researching some of the timeline, and it goes back to 1855 when Emelina Jones was the first practicing dentist in the United States.
Were you one of her partners?
I was a few years ahead of her.
Okay, good.
Thanks a lot for that, Tom.
I'm just kidding with you. Go ahead.
1866, Dr. Felsenburgh. She was the first dental graduate of a dental school. The first woman was just a kind of an apprentice, and she graduated from Ohio Dental College.
And in 1866? So right around the Civil War, huh?
Right. 1821, American Association of Women Dentists was formed.
1921, I think.
1921, yeah. 1975, the first dental dean at Howard University, a woman. First woman dental dean. 1991, the first president of the American Dental Association, Geraldine Morrow. I think she's from Alaska. And 2009, Kathy O'Loughlin was appointed CEO, executive director of the American Dental Association in Chicago. So those are some of the timelines of how women got their toes into the hierarchy of dentistry.
Now, Kathy's a really interesting story. I know Kathy really well. When I was at Delta Dental Plan of Massachusetts in the mid-'80s through the mid-'90s, before I happily moved to New Hampshire, although I had a great time in Massachusetts, but didn't realize how great New Hampshire was. So Kathy was a practicing dentist, had kids, was also on the board of directors of Delta Dental Plan of Massachusetts. Then later, after I came up to Northeast Delta Dental in 1995, a few years after that, she actually became CEO of Delta Dental Plan of Massachusetts and held that position for a few years. And now, later on, moved to Chicago and has become the CEO of the American Dental Association. So I'm sure you knew Kathy from Tufts. So she's a great example of someone who got the education and has really, you know, leveraged it. I know she was a great board member and a great colleague. She was also a great CEO at Delta Dental Plan of Massachusetts. So I think the ADA is lucky to have her. What do you think, Bob?
Well, I know Kathy really well, too. She was a student of mine, and she graduated in 1981 with high honors from the dental school, and she was, we were talking about pregnancy, she was very pregnant during her senior year, and she actually missed graduation because she was giving birth. So she was one that did it all, and just a very good student, a nice lady, and then she's gone on to do all the things that that Tom just said. So she's a real groundbreaker.
That's great. That's good. That's good to hear. I'm glad she's doing really well, and I know her husband Steve and her kids, you know, really well. So that's great. And hopefully the next time I'm in Chicago, I'll get to see her again. So what are some of the other trends that are going on? I mean, do you see? We talked briefly about the fact that really. There's been a kind of a shift. There's maybe been, for some dental practices, a lack of busyness. I know we have this Northeast Delta Dental statistics. When the economy tanked in 2008, while people with dental insurance continued to go to the dentist, once subscribers lost their employment and used up COBRA, if they went into COBRA, they literally stopped going to the dentist, because we know statistically, if you have some form of dental coverage, 90% of that population will go to the dentist. If you don't have dental insurance, something like only 30% of that population will go to the dentist. So putting aside the politics of dental insurance and everything else, the bottom line is, citizens in New Hampshire, but also America in general, if you have some sort of dental insurance, you tend to go to the dentist a lot more than if you don't. So if you're getting into the profession now, are you now thinking in terms of being in a group practice? Do you put your sort of visionary hat on? Are you seeing that there'll be less individual proprietors? How do you see that, Bob?
Well, What happened in the late 80s, early 90s, a whole bunch of really top dental schools closed for various reasons. And so there had been a glut of dentists on the market. And what's happening now is with the technology changing and dentists becoming more efficient in their own offices. And as Tom said, the 2008-2007 economic turndown, there are a lot of dentists that have time on their hands. I think it's very difficult for somebody to open a practice today the way I did, because the average debt coming out of dental school is something like $250,000. So to open a practice, which may cost as much as another $300,000, and that's without housing or a car or anything else, a mortgage, it's difficult to do. I think that the trend is to copper dentistry. There's a lot of Aspen-like situations opening up, and that just makes it easier for somebody that's heavily in debt to go in and just pick up a paycheck and not have to worry about patient flow. And
so is that a combination, or maybe a combination of three things, the debt that the individual student has, but also maybe a lifestyle decision that the new generation has, which is that maybe being a salaried employee working 3 or 4 days a week as opposed to being totally responsible and working 6 days a week or whatever, you've got that going, as well as the fact that probably to compete, you know, use the best the most efficient labs and so forth, the group model may in fact be the way to go. So is that how you see it?
Yeah, I do. I think it's just difficult for the average kid to open up something if he's that far in debt. There's just no way that he has a cash flow to be able to live with. But I think that's an individual type of thing. I mean, there are some people that'll go out there and do it well. And then there are other people that are a little bit more laid back and just want to look at the paycheck and not have to worry about the administrative responsibilities. And for them, a corporate structure is probably the way to go. But dentists are no different than the rest of the population, and I think that psychologically that just trends over the entire dental world.
That's good to hear that they're no different than the rest of the normal population. If you look at the Myers, I know that a few years ago the ADA did a Myers-Briggs study. That's kind of a personality type on the then dental graduates, those people that voluntarily participated in the Myers-Briggs. And by the way, that's kind of a test that a lot of employers use. It's not a test. There's no right reason, but it basically tells you whether you're entrepreneurial, whether you're externally focused, whether you're an introvert or extrovert. And a lot of dentists, at least at that time, got into dentistry because of their entrepreneurial nature. The other thing I've noticed, still, and this is still true today, a lot of families seem to cluster. In other words, it'd be like an uncle that's a dentist or a father or a mother. And in those situations, you know, a father-daughter team, a mother-daughter team, a mother-son team, those are situations where perhaps the son or daughter can get into the family practice and keep it as a smaller business as opposed to corporate dentistry, it seems to me.
Yeah, that I mean, if somebody's lucky enough to have a parent or an uncle or someone in the practice, and the practice is already established, I mean, that's terrific for provided the father and son get along.
Well,
that's
another show. But I always say to I'm with my work with the State Board of Education, I get out there a lot, and parents ask me about the professions, and I say dentistry. You know, even though obviously with the University of New England and a few other dental schools, I mean, the invisible hand takes care of everything. So as you mentioned, Bob, a lot of dental schools, you know, closed down in the 90s, but now we have two or three new ones. And so the invisible hand of supply and demand are always there. But I always say it's a great profession. I know when I speak to my dentist colleagues, when they repair someone's mouth, the thrill, in a good way that they get, and the nice notes that they get from their patients, you know, that my mouth is restored, my smile is restored, my self-confidence is restored, that all of that makes it exhilarating. And it's also a great, you know, small business. So I would still recommend that those of you that have sons and daughters who are in college right now and are considering grad school, definitely you might want to consider the University of New England right here in Portland. Because, Bob, you were talking about the debt earlier, but when all is said and done, if you were in Tufts in Boston and the student has to have a place to live, you're probably talking about $100,000 a year, would you say?
That's just about what it is. They predict somewhere in the mid-90s per year for 4 years. So that's a tough debt.
So we have about 45 seconds. So when you've taught there a lot, so what's the one observation you would make about the students today versus, let's say, 15 years ago, putting aside the male-female thing? I know when I meet with students, I'm always impressed with their brilliance and intelligence, and I always say, I went to Harvard, but my wife says, you could never get in there again, and that's probably true. So what's your observation?
The students have, all the time that I've been there, they're really, really bright. They're really motivated. They're enthusiastic. I don't think that there's a big difference between when I started in 1971 and now. It's more competitive getting into the schools. The man-woman thing, I don't think there's any difference between the caliber of students at all. It's just a lot of fun teaching there.
Yeah, so you're optimistic. And I know I met the first dental class at University of New England, and these young women and men, I mean, I'm so optimistic about the future. And also they're willing to practice in some of the underserved areas in New Hampshire, Maine, and Vermont. Well, we're at the end of our time, Dr. Barb Urban. Once again, I'm going to have you back. We just touched on these topics. Tom Raffio will return next weekend with more of Northeast Delta Dental Radio.